In this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
And it is just a few seconds before 11 a.m. You do have it tuned to KBOO Portland. And coming up next, Glenn Andreessen hosts The Dirtbag. He and guest Jim Gilbert discuss the bud graft method for building fruit trees. They also talk about when and how to pick fruits and veggies at their peak. And they also will have some giveaways today. So do stay tuned for The Dirtbag. And we want to thank the KBOO members, all you KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you're not a member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. And also by a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And by One Green World, a nursery offering a hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. Now located in Portland at 6469 Southeast 134th. For a color catalog, the number is 1-877-353-4028 or online at onegreenworld.com.
Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for The Dirtbag. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. With me is my guest, Jim Gilbert of One Green World Nursery. Full disclosure, One Green World is an underwriter of this program. Welcome, Jim.
Morning, Glenn. Happy summer.
A fine morning it is.
Isn't it?
A little bit of coolness in the air today.
Yeah, I'm trying to feel that coolness.
Well, get on your bicycle.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good. Great. Yeah. It's going to get warm.
Yeah, but that's the way it is. Warmth is good for ripening things. We'll talk about how and when to ripen. To harvest vegetables and fruits at their peak. We will also have a discussion on bud grafting. I'm assuming that you're an expert on this, Jim. Bud grafting?
We actually call it budding.
Budding, okay.
Yeah, but it's, we do. It's that's our primary method of propagating fruiting plants in the field.
Right, and we'll talk about that, the advantages of doing that versus the maybe more well-known cleft grafting, which was done when the rootstock is dormant. So we'll talk about the advantages and disadvantages of each of those. We will talk about a little bit about what's going in the hive, the honeybee hive, if we have time, because we always leave time for your questions. 503-231-8187. That's also the number to call if you have an answer to one of our several garden stumper questions, because we do have three pairs of tickets to give away to the Portland Ecofilm Series Festival happening at the Hollywood Theater once a month or so through October, I believe. We're up to July now, on July 24th. That's a Thursday at 7:30. A little bit different lineup this month in that there is not one feature film, but four shorter ones. And I'll tell you the names of these. The Lost Fish, The Struggle to Save Pacific Lamprey. It's kind of self-explanatory. Backyard is not a gardening story, but instead has to do with the how fracking, the oil recovery method fracking, has to do, how that affects people's lives, five people's lives. The third one is called Greg Trenish, A Movie Shake Story. This fellow, Greg, said when asked how others could follow their passion for making change, Greg Trenish simply replied, 3 seconds of courage. That's all it takes. He was named Adventurer of the Year by National Geographic. That sounds interesting. And the final one, Brooklyn Farmer, which explores the unique challenges facing Brooklyn Grange, a group of urban farmers who endeavor to run a commercially viable farm within the landscape of New York City. As their growing operation expands to a second roof, a team confronts the realities in operating the world's largest rooftop farm in one of the world's biggest cities.
Second roof, that's pretty big. Then,
yeah.
You get three or four roofs going to make little bridges so you can drive your tractor between buildings.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any mechanized machinery.
What a concept.
Yeah. Well, you can go see all four of those on July 24th at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater, and all you have to do is answer our garden stumper quizzes. And boy, we've got three of them here. So, Jim, we'll just do one right now. How's that? Do you want to start off there?
Sure.
Okay.
Many fruiting plants have visible flowers. In fact, by far the vast majority. But there's one very important one that does not have visible flowers. And I'm wondering if someone out there in the listening audience can tell us which one that is.
All right. So, you know, there's just one, or there may be a second
one. There may be others, but we'll see if somebody comes up with the one that I'm not thinking of.
Right. Okay, so if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187, and that's good for a pair of tickets to the Ecofilm Series. Okay, plant of the month. Let's just go for it, eh?
Absolutely.
Cherries.
Cherries.
You brought just one variety of cherries.
I bought cherries of cherries one variety, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Cherries this year are amazing. I've never had such a good crop. I can't believe it. The birds have gone somewhere else. I've been eating cherries for weeks, and I'm just thrilled. I mean, I go out and I pick them, and you know, I'm amazed. There are a few birds around, but usually they get most of them off our trees. And this year we've just had a tremendous bounty.
What do you attribute that, this bountiful year?
Well, maybe there's so many that the birds just can't eat them all. One possibility, but I think my neighbor has blueberries. He's got a bird sort of rejection call that goes on. You know, it was funny. We'll be sitting outside listening to hawks attack birds and other, you know, who knows what's going on, but funny sounds. But I can't think that that's scaring them off the entire neighborhood. Nature, something is, there's just less starts.
I mean, it was cold, but that didn't affect, it was cold at the, you know, kind of the typical times.
Yeah.
So the trees were dormant. So
yeah, starlings are what usually bother ours, and robins a bit, but there's just not the birds. So
so it's not necessarily that there's more cherries on the tree, but just maybe fewer birds.
Well, we're not sure, you know, what the actual reason is, but we're just loving it.
Okay. Well. Okay, we do have a call. Let's see if there's an answer to our garden stumper. Oh, go ahead, caller. You're on the air. Maybe? Maybe not. Okay. So let's talk about cherries then. Is there appropriate size cherries for city farms?
That is definitely one of the challenges. And I was remembering some time ago on this show, you described a method, your method of making dwarf cherries, which I thought was really interesting. So I'd like you to tell about that.
Well, okay. Yeah, it's not my method, but it's the method I use.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are dwarfing rootstocks. The biggest challenge with cherries, in my opinion, is disease issues. Mm-hmm. They're a member of the Prunus family. They don't like particularly wet climates. And so the challenge is to find reliable, productive varieties that do handle our climate. And you can spray and do all sorts of things to try to make a plant more adaptable, but I like them when they just do it themselves without any extra input. So that's, to me, one of the main things is just to, you know, choose a variety that's suited for here for our climate. And we're not growing these in the Dalles or Wenatchee or Yakima or someplace.
Which has better, more appropriate weather.
Much drier.
Yes. Yeah, because it's rain that is the vector of these. Yeah. Most of these diseases.
Right, and primarily bacterial canker, which causes wounds, oozing of sap on the trunk and will kill the bark and eventually kill branches and trees will become ugly. And so that's my criteria.
Well, I will tell you what happened to my cherry tree after we see if we have some answers to the stumpers here. Okay. You ready for that?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, caller. You're on the Dirtbag.
Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I have a good guess.
All right.
Or something I know. So what I'm going to say is it's mycelium.
Mycelium.
And the fruit of the mycelium is mushrooms.
Mushrooms. Yes. Well.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of a fruit. You know, not a mushroom, but we certainly, if you feel like that qualifies.
Well, I would have to argue for our caller, Jim.
Okay.
Because we do call the fruit of funguses fruit. I mean, the mushrooms, we call them fruit.
The mushrooms, the fruiting body. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh.
Fruiting body, however.
And mycelium is just one of the most amazing plants in the whole world. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, that might not be what you were thinking.
Well, it's not what we were thinking, but I'm going to have Kate take down your name, and we will put you on the guest pass list for your answer.
And it's only fair.
Cool.
That's right.
Cool.
It's only fair.
And this is Linda. Thank you.
For that. Okay, stay on the line, and Kate will get your name, so it'll be on the guest list there. And I'll talk to the folks that be at the Hollywood Theater and see if we can get four pairs of tickets for this, in case somebody does get your answer.
Okay.
Okay, Linda, great. Great, great answer. Okay, Kate, are we going for another call? Okay, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. You're on
Hello?
The air. Yep, you're on the air.
Hi there. I was thinking of a tree fruit, and I think it's a fig.
Yes,
right.
That's what I was thinking of.
All right.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of, too.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual fruit where you don't see the flowers. And the only creature that actually will see the flowers on certain figs is the wasp that crawls in the end of the fruit to pollinate them.
So is that
right.
Okay. If, Jim, is that on every fig that wasps are responsible for the pollination of that?
No.
Okay.
The figs all have the same fruiting structure, but on most of the figs we grow here, the wasp does not play a role. It doesn't live here. Doesn't use it. But so our figs are basically self-fertile and don't require pollination.
I see. This just kind of, are you still with us, caller?
I still am.
Okay, good. Stay on the line because we're going to come back to you. So what would happen if you planted a fig? It's a sterile fruit, so there's no way to get more fruit that way?
Well, if you plant a fig, you'll get fruit in the, like, for example, Desert King, which is one of my favorites I've talked about many times. You get lots and lots of fruit, but the fruit's not pollinated. The flowers don't get pollinated, so the seeds in the flower inside the fruit are empty. They won't grow. And people that do breeding of figs do force the issue and pollinate, make sure they get pollinated. Yeah. So they do have seeds that are viable.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the way it is. Okay, caller, you still with us, or Is Kate talking to you now? Okay, well, let's hope Kate's talking to her now to get on the guest list. That okay, well, we've got more questions and on opportunities for the tickets for the Hollywood Theater. And after we play a Cherry-related song here, we'll be back with more answers and questions. Stay tuned. Sweet Cherry Red, that's called. Cherry Red. Esther Phillips from 1972. Going back ways. Okay, well, that leads us now to the second Garden Stumper. We're not done with cherries yet, but here it comes. On average, this is just average, so you're going to have to work with me on this. How many cherries are on an average pie cherry tree? You ever thought about that?
Enough for a pie, I hope.
Well, we would hope so, too. Yeah. So, okay. So, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. This is how many cherries are on an average pie cherry tree.
Is it by pound or by piece?
Piece. Mm-hmm. Each one. Yeah. So, and I realize this varies depending on the age of the tree, the weather, the growing conditions, and whatnot. But this is just on average. And to get this pair of tickets, I'm going to say you can be within 2,000.
Wow.
I'm making it pretty easy here.
So if a cherry tree only has one?
Yeah, 1,000.
No, one cherry.
Well, then you, and you guessed
2,000,
you'd then still be okay. You'd still be all right. That's right.
Wow.
I'm just saying it's a lot of cherries.
It's a lot of cherries.
That's right. 503-231-8187. Okay, now on what happened to my cherry tree this year. It's a Rainier, and it was actually pretty good production. I had tremendous aphid infestation at the tips of the growing tips, so much that it curled the leaves and then they just blackened.
What color? Just killed them. What color were the aphids?
They were black.
Uh-huh. There is a black cherry aphid that, that we sometimes confront in the nursery row.
Uh-huh.
It's very specific. It just does an amazingly terrible job on those on a little cherry,
Yes. Tree. Well, what this de facto did was it pruned it for me, because it really just stunted the growing tips of cherry trees, the cherry tree, and it was, and so I think that was a good thing, you know, because cherries grow so much, and I'll talk a little bit about the Spanish bush method that you alluded to earlier,
right,
about how I prune it. This is just going to keep those branches from getting longer, and cherries blossom on existing branches as well as new branches, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so no harm done. And boy, did I have a lot of ladybug larvae. And then new ladybugs too, that, you know, that eventually controlled them.
So we have aphids and we have ladybugs, but did we have cherries?
Yes, pretty good. Rainier cherries, yeah. I mean, if I had to stay ahead of the birds.
Yeah.
And whatnot, but so that's my story.
Good. Well, I'm glad that it worked out well.
Okay, let's go to Karen and see if she has a question or an answer for us. Good morning, Karen.
Hi. I had actually a question about a caller you had last month.
Okay.
Talk about apricots.
Yeah.
About picking them up off the farms that fall to the ground.
Oh, yeah, in Goldendale or something.
Is that? I was trying to figure out. They mentioned a route. So it's Goldendale is the town?
Oh, it was on the way to Umatilla?
Take the Highway 97, the bridge across from Biggs Junction. Go up I-84, you can do it also in Washington 14 on the north side of the Columbia River Gorge. But when you get, if you're going I-84, you get to Biggs Junction, which is Highway 97.
Okay.
Go across the Columbia River.
Okay.
And right at the bottom of the bridge, the base of the bridge on the Washington side, is a fruit stand that sells all sorts of good stuff and has an apricot orchard, if not maybe more than one, on the to the east of that fruit stand on the highway.
Okay, and so that's in Washington, I'm assuming, after we cross the river?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Bye. Sure.
And there was another a caller called in, too, and he said something to the effect that wasn't, you know, you could get them around Hermiston or Umatilla or something like that, too. Do you remember that?
I don't remember, but I'm sure. But all those places east, you know, they've got apricots, and you can just pig out on them.
Okay. Okay, Jeremy. Good morning, Jeremy. You're on the Dirtbag.
Howdy. I'm going to take a wild guess on your pie cherries.
Yep.
And say 2,000.
Nope. There's more than that. And I would have given it to you if you were within 2,000.
Okay.
So that's a lot of tree. That's a lot of blossoms.
You got it.
Yeah.
That's
good.
Wild.
That's a good one, though.
You could go out right now and start counting.
Pie cherries are almost done, aren't they?
Yeah, but you know, probably still something there you could get within 2,000.
Well, to tie this into bees stuff, you know, cherries are very attractive to honeybees. They like visiting those blossoms because they've got a high sugar content in them and whatnot. And so we compare the, you know, one tree that has this many blossoms that I'll eventually tell you about, and compared to what we have now growing, which is there aren't very many blossoming trees for our bees.
Mm.
And hence the nectar flow is slowing way down. Interesting that I have one of my colonies is on a scale, so I can measure how much weight they're putting on every day.
Uh-huh.
And before we had those few days of rains towards the end of last week or last month, or maybe it was this month, I can't remember when we had the rain, but I just remember some numbers. On a Monday, it was 5 pounds they put on. Tuesday was 5 pounds. Wednesday was 7.5 pounds. Yeah, Thursday, just 2.5 because it started raining that day. and Friday was 0 pounds.
Huh.
And then 4 pounds and 4 pounds. And now it's averaging about 2 pounds a day.
Mm-hmm.
So at least they're putting on something. When it, if I kept weighing them through the winter, which I don't, they'd be losing weight,
yeah.
Of course, because they're eating their stores.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It also reminds me that another reason we had such a good cherry harvest was because of nice weather when the cherries
mm-hmm.
were blooming.
Mm-hmm.
So the bees were happy and flying around and doing their work.
And unlike figs, which essentially requires no pollination or pollinizer, cherries do.
Yes.
And it's a very tricky table that we consult to see which trees will pollinize other trees. And there's like 8 different levels or something like that. And if they're within each, if the same tree is within the same level, like say level 2 or 4, they won't pollinize each other. And unfortunately, some of the major ones, the old standards anyway, Bings, Royal Ants, are in the same level. But there's a lot of varieties of cherries now.
Yeah.
And the ones that are sold are generally not those. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Well, there's a lot of Bing still on the market coming
but
from the east.
What's the name of the other big...
Lappens is
a very
popular large-fruited one.
Right, dark.
Yeah. It's interesting. I know you read a lot about these pollination requirements of plants, and yet you get great crops without worrying too much about it. And I think there's just a lot of wild cherry pollen out there, and manages to be pollination happening. If you lived in a really remote area, you might have to pay more attention to it. But
right.
We get pretty good crops
in the city. Yeah.
Well, not even where I am in the country.
Well, you've got a lot of trees.
Yeah, but we have some. There's some ones just like seedlings around, you know, that the birds have eaten, and you know they drop the seeds, and they grow up and in the woods or the along the creeks or something. There's cherry trees that, and even some of the fruit on those is not real bad. One of my most exciting discoveries this year was a variety we brought back from Italy, or we actually didn't get it from Italy, but it came from Italy. We got it here in the U.S. That is a one of the types used in Italy as a real maraschino cherry.
Uh-huh.
And this is not the kind of thing that you get on a top of an ice cream sundae, which is just basically a cherry with which all of the cherry has been removed from and chemicals and so forth have been put into it. This was a very different fruit, smaller than a typical maraschino cherry that you think of, but very flavorful, very sweet, incredibly dark. Like the juice, I would think, is super high in antioxidants. And a really interesting variety, really fun.
All right. Well, we're still looking for the answer to our garden stumper question of, on average, how many cherries are on an average pie cherry tree? I guess I said average twice. How many cherries are on an average pie cherry tree within 2,000? This gives you one pair of tickets to the Hollywood Theater. Thursday, July 24th, the Ecofilm.
And all those films are going to be shown the same night?
Yeah, they're shorts.
Shorts.
Yeah, I don't know how long each one is. 15, 20, 30 minutes, I suppose. Okay. Well, let's, shall we talk about budding?
Well, let me just mention a couple of cherry varieties that I like.
Very good.
And then we can leave cherries and go to that subject. So so this year I noticed there's a couple of other factors that go into cherry growing. And one is resistance to cracking when it rains.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have 2 New York varieties that I really like a lot. This year, very reliable, lots and lots of fruit. And these, I like these particularly because they don't seem to have any bacterial canker problems.
Hmm.
One is called Heartland and the other is called White Gold. We haven't started propagating these yet, but I think we will. We had rain with cherries on the tree, and the rain you're talking about. And it was interesting because the Heartland split. And we were able to eat a lot and save a lot of the cherries. We froze a lot of them, but they wouldn't last for very long once they split like that. But the White Gold didn't split, and that's what I brought you to try.
I see, and they're hardly white or white. Gold.
No, but that's their name, so yeah. We have to put up with it.
They have some white blush on them, but they're, you know, they're red.
Yeah, they're more reindeer type color in a way, but maybe a bit darker than a typical reindeer. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this white gold may be connected to the gold variety of Charity, which is a really yellow cherry. There's no darkness in it. And that one has also been extremely reliable for us. Great crops every year on that one. And again, when I'm looking at cherry varieties that people, you know, for just the general person here in the Pacific Northwest, those are the cherries. I want cherries. You know,
yeah.
I might not get a Lappin's or big huge one or something like that, but if I have good tasting cherries, I'm happy.
Well, you brought some in here, and we'll be tasting those on our on our next musical break, eh? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Okay, so that's cherries. If you have any questions about cherries or the answer to our garden stumper, on average, how many cherries are on a pie cherry tree within 2,000? All right. Well, let's take a break, and we'll be back to talk about budding, building your own fruit trees. That's old Canned Heat. Let's Work Together. And that's, do you get the tie in there, Jim? Let's Work Together. Budding.
Oh, yes.
Yes, we're going to work together with Scion Wood and Rootstock.
Okay, all sorts of fun terminology.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about, you know, cleft grafting during February. You know, we have the Home Orchard Society, but I don't know that we've ever talked about bud grafting or budding. It's a different type and certainly different timing.
Yeah. And it's really that's something most homeowners would be doing, because unless you're growing rootstock and you normally graft because it's so fast, it's what you do in the spring. Budding is not done until August typically, and in a little bit of September, early September.
I forgot, Jim, that we're going to take this call first. It's got an answer to the garden stumper. How many cherries are on an average pie cherry tree?
4,000.
4,000? I'm sorry. That's still not right.
And not within 2,000.
It's still not within 2,000. That's right. That's the way it is. But there's a lot of cherries on those trees. You know, sometimes they're just, the branches are just red.
I don't have the average tree in my yard, I don't think.
Because you don't have that many.
I don't have.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably got this fact off some, you know, the cherry producers website or something
from
like
Michigan.
That. Yeah, well, I can't say that. Yeah. Okay, well, we're still looking for the answer to that. Within 2,000, how many cherries there? But that was a good guess. Okay, budding. So you really don't even refer to budding as grafting.
Not in us, those of us that are in the know.
Okay, but it is a type of grafting. I mean, we're taking one part from one tree,
right,
and
that's right,
and actually grafting right. it to the other.
The big difference is that with grafting, you take what we all call a piece of cyanwood, which is a stick that will normally have at least two buds on it, and you do this, and you can really do it fairly late in the spring, as long as the cyan is dormant. So.
If you've kept it in a fridge or something,
right,
you keep
it
dormant.
Take the stick off the tree in the winter when it's dormant, so asleep. Put it in a plastic bag with just a few drops of water, not wet, and just put it in your refrigerator. Leave it there, and then you can graft that probably till May if you want.
Oh, May. Okay, yeah. That's kind of good to know. I've never tried it past March.
You can do it later than that, as long as that cyan's dormant. Sure.
Okay. But that's not what we're talking about.
That's not what we're talking about. With budding. Typically, you can bud with a dormant bud that's asleep, and just like you take the bud off that stick, and you can bud that. Or more typically, in production growing, you do it in August with new buds that have grown that year. They're green and have hardened off. They've matured over the summer. So by August, we count on them being mature buds, and we'll. Take a bud, just the actual bud, not the stick. You make a kind of a special slicing cut on the shoot that come out that you've collected from the plant, a cherry or apple or whatever.
And you can do this the same day that you take it.
Typically, you do that. You can store the wood for a few days, but more likely you'll be doing it within a day or two of when you collect it. You take this special cut. You make the same kind of a cut. On the tree, and this is called chip budding because we're just taking a chip essentially with the bud on it, and we take the same cut on the rootstock. We put this chip with the bud on that cut spot, and it should match, should be pretty close in the same size. And then we wrap that up with budding tape, and we leave it for 30 days or so. It calluses. Joins together with the rootstock, and then after about a month, we'll cut the tape off, and that's going to be in September or possibly even early October. Remove the tape, and the bud will sit there dormant and asleep until spring. And so in March, we'll go back and we'll cut the top of that rootstock off. So it's probably hard to visualize this a little bit, but that's the general process.
So this is different than when you talk about the chip budding. You're just matching up the little slice that you took with the bud off the type of fruit that you want,
right.
And you're just matching that up exactly with a matching nick, we'll say, out of the rootstock.
Yes.
So what's the type of grafting or that you would cut a T?
Yeah, T-budding.
T-budding. So that's different than the chip budding.
That's right. And T-budding is a little more labor intensive and is not commonly used anymore.
Oh.
Commercial growers use chip budding.
And is there an advantage to the T-bud?
In most cases, no.
Okay.
It could be.
Because I learned how to do that.
Really? Yeah. No, the chip bud works great. And
okay.
It's a faster process.
And so you don't really gain anything on this in that you are, you're cutting off you're not gaining a half a year or something like that because you're cutting off all the new growth if you grafted in, say, last March, then next March you'd be 1 year. If you graft now or in August, does it take that 6 months to catch up?
Yes, because the bud is dormant all winter. It's just sitting there, not growing.
Okay.
So you could either bud in August or graft in March.
Next March and be at the same
spot. Next March and you'd be at the same
point. Okay, but this is very easy to do this time of year and the weather's nice.
If you're doing thousands of trees, it's a much faster process.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the phones and see what we have here. Teresa, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
First of all, the cherries are in the Prunus genus, but they're in the rose family. And secondly, for pie cherry trees, I'd say 1,100 to 1,300 cherries on average.
Nope, more than that. Way more than that. according to this, now maybe I have bad information, but no, that's not the answer. But okay, so you said that it's a member of the Prunus
Rose family.
Rose family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rosaceae is the family. And I'm sorry, I wasn't. It's thank you for your correction on that. You know, family, genus, and species are the terms we should be using. And I was used the word family incorrectly, but okay, Prunus is the genus.
Yeah, we got smart listeners, Jim.
That's good. Really.
Okay, that was. Let's see what Lydia has to say. Good morning, Lydia.
Hi. I think it's more around 7,000.
Well, it's not more than. It is 7,000. That's the answer. That's the answer we're looking for. 7,000 blossoms. Okay, Lydia, make sure you stay on the line here so Kate can get your contact information so you can, your name will be on the guest list there on the 24th of July at the Hollywood Theater.
Wonderful.
Great. Thanks a lot.
7,000. Yeah. That's a lot.
It is. Now, who knows how many blossoms you get to get 7,000 cherries? You know, probably not everyone gets pollinated.
I think we have to do some counting next spring, Glenn.
You keep talking about.
I've got some fine cherry trees. Yeah. Come on out.
What's the common pie cherry here?
Montmorency is pretty common.
How's that?
Montmorency?
Montmorency.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And another one North Star is another one that we grow, that we like.
And these will both pollinate the sweet cherries, too.
That's what they say.
Okay, that's what they say. All right.
I'm not sure the bloom time is always matched up so well.
All right. Okay, that's it on budding. Because we want to talk about harvesting at its peak.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. There's not a lot of vegetables now that we're talking about harvesting at its peak. This is short, so I'll just start, with greens and things like that, lettuce and whatnot. You know, we've been harvesting those for a while. You pick them when they're young. You can pick the side shoots and as they get larger. But at some point, lettuce will just turn bitter. But you can always cut out the spine, as I say, even when they start to bolt, you can get a little bit more out of that. But the best thing is just to plant to every 2 or 3 weeks and have a fresh supply coming on. When broccoli, it's better to harvest when the buds are very tight. When they start opening up, then they get a little bit more bitter or acrid, we might say. And even if they're turning yellow, they're edible, but they're just not as tasty. As small. Teeny zucchini. That's it. That's what we want there. I mean, you can, let them get big if you're going to grate them and make bread or pudding or, I don't know, does anybody make zucchini pudding?
Zucchini pie.
Well, whatever. Yeah. So that's what we want. Small things there. Potatoes, you can harvest kind of anytime. When they start flowering, that's a good time. They're starting to their maturation process there, so you can do it. I would say you already should have harvested garlic by now. I harvested mine a month ago. I think I mentioned that last month that I had harvested my garlic before the rain came, mm-hmm. or I was going to harvest it before the rain came, and I did. It's looking good. Okay, let's do some fruit.
Well, cherries, of course, have been the stellar part of my life recently. Blueberries are also ripening now. I have a neighbor with 30 acres across the street from me, and they've already done through a couple of pickings, and we have our own small bushes. And
just a reminder, neither cherries nor blueberries ripen on the they ripen after, they do not ripen further after they've been picked.
That's correct.
Okay, so
that's right.
Well, now we're looking for the peak time to pick those.
Right, and how, well, with cherries, I just taste them, and when they start to get a little soft and they come off, this seems fairly obvious to me when they're ripe. I'm not sure how I could describe that better than saying, that they get a little tender and taste good.
Mm-hmm.
And blueberries fall off when they're ripe. You just brush them and they just come off in your hands more or less.
And I've, from what I remember, blueberries are not fully ripe until about maybe 7 to 10 days after they've started turning color.
Yes.
Blue.
Right.
So they increase in flavor and sweetness if you can stand to leave them on there for that long.
If you have to,
or
yank,
the birds don't get them.
Right. If you have to yank on them, then they're not ripe.
Yeah, that's kind of true with a lot of fruits, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Things like raspberries. You know, raspberries come off easily when they're ripe. If they don't come off easily, they're not ready to pick.
That's right.
Yeah. So at this time of year, I mean, that's what we've gone through strawberries and honeyberries, which honeyberry also was a great crop. And it's like blueberries that when it's ripe, it just falls off into your hand, more or less. Then we're hitting blackberry season is coming up, which includes tayberries and a bunch of other ones like Marion berries and Logan berries and boysenberries and all of those. And really, again, those, when they're ready to come off, they'll come off the plant easily. They're not going to, again, you shouldn't have to yank on them. They're very easy to tell when they're ripe because they are not so great to eat unless they're ripe.
Yes.
You know.
Or if they're too ripe. Let me ask you this question here. I've had some of my Marion berries that are, you know, it seems like they're ripe elsewhere, but I mean, on the berry itself, but then a quarter of them are still red.
Yeah.
You know, there's just what causes that, or what's going on there?
Well, usually, I mean, I've seen that too, and I think it's just part of the nature of the plant, and so one waits, and hopefully the red ones will turn.
Well, no, I mean, on a berry.
Oh, on a berry,
itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. I don't think it's a lack of pollination in my yard.
Probably not.
yeah,
I'm not familiar. I'm not sure. So that's one of our great treats in Oregon is the berries, and we have some of the best that you can eat. You can get anywhere. I mean, in Western Oregon, I mean, that's like people will travel miles and miles to come eat our berries because if you go the Midwest, I mean, they try to grow them there, but they just don't have the climate for it. Our climate is really perfect for blackberries and relatives.
One of the varieties of raspberry that I grow, Tulamine, familiar with that one? Mm-hmm. Tulamine, large.
Yep.
But boy, they don't hold up in the heat. Boy, they just turn to mush.
Yeah.
But other raspberries do much better.
Yeah.
But boy, that's a good one until the heat gets them.
Heritage I like a lot. It's a really good variety and it seems to hold up well. But we are getting tested right now with some hot weather. I mean, this is, we're doing something kind of interesting at the nursery too, which is related to the hot weather. We are attempting to solarize old potting soil so we can reuse it, kill the weed seeds and the diseases in it. And it's quite an interesting project. I would love to have somebody help me with this a little bit to document it because it's not only saving money, but it's saving the world too because we're using a plastic-covered greenhouse and we get temperatures of 180 degrees inside that greenhouse. It's almost impossible to go in there physically. I mean, I hold my breath. Yeah, it's crazy. But
jeez.
But we're getting the soil up to 140 degrees.
And that's what you need.
That's what we need to do the soil.
For how long? Just three or four days?
An afternoon.
Oh.
If it gets up to that temperature.
Are you getting expert advice on this?
But yeah, there's some things written about it. Mostly it's California stuff. So we're pretty excited. If we can make it work, it's worthy of note.
You know? Huh. Yeah, well, the sun's free.
Yeah, the sun is free, absolutely. No solar, no fossil fuel involved.
All right. Okay, well, speaking of picking at its peak, you know, there's, according to the song by, I can't even remember who it was, Hoyt Axton or something like that, two things that money can't buy. I don't have this song, but True Love and Homegrown Tomatoes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe it's John Prine. One of our listeners will probably know that. Oh, yeah. Kate knows, she thinks. Yes, our ace engineer. No, it was there and then it was gone out of her
brain. Pondering that one.
Yes, right. But Greg Brown. Okay. We have, I got a tomato song anyway, and I've played this one the last couple of years, but I like this a lot. Peter Green and Like a Hot Tomato.
Thank you.
Like a Hot Tomato. Peter Green, one of the founding members of Fleetwood Mac. Okay, let's go to see what Francesca has to say. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if, because at first I thought it was a trick question, if an artichoke would be considered the fruit or vegetable that doesn't
artichoke.
Flower.
We didn't say vegetable. I think we just said fruit, though, in this case.
Oh.
But an artichoke does flower.
And that's what you're eating. I just thought.
Yeah, you're
never
eating.
Never mind.
It's a beautiful flower, by the way, though, when it does flower. You know, bees are attracted to it, bumblebees particularly. See, our listeners are thinking, Jim.
I know.
They're thinking.
We'll have to come up with some more good stumpers.
That's right. Okay, good question, though. All right. Microphone here is acting up on me. Okay, I do have one more garden stumper here. This has to do with bees. Queen bees. Kate's going to get it. There it is. All right, Kate reminded me, but we don't have any tickets left. I'm going to work on that one. I'll talk to my contact, Don, and see if we can squeeze in another one. We only have 8 minutes anyway for this question, but where did I write this down? Here it is. Now, the queen bee, you know, she's a big bee. She has a lot of important things to do. She can lay up to 1,500 eggs a day. That's a lot. She's working all the time, and she's eating all the time. So the question is, how much does a queen bee eat to produce, you know, 1,500 eggs, 2,000 eggs? And I'm looking at now how many times her weight does she eat per day? She's fed all the time. So, you know, she eats, if she ate two times her weight or 10 times her weight.
You're not looking in milligrams then.
No, just how many times her weight does she eat to produce that many eggs? And I'm going to give you, I'm going to tell you it's a large number, more than you would expect. So if you're within 25 times.
25 times?
Yeah, so it's more than that, yeah.
Wow.
She's just being fed all the time because she's laying all the time.
Just out of curiosity, how much does she weigh?
Well, I don't know that.
With wings beating or without?
You know how many times a honeybee's wings beat per second?
No.
It's not nearly as fast as a hummingbird, but 180 times a second.
Wow.
That's what gives a hum.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so if you know the answer to that, I know it's not much time and it's kind of complicated. 503-231-8187.
And what kind of food is the queen bee eating?
Royal jelly, which is a secretion that the bees make in their heads. And there's glands in their heads that it comes out, and that the nurse bees feed it to the queen all the time. I mean, not all the time, because she's laying part of the time.
Wow. You know, you've been doing some work with queen bees. And
Yes. My project here to raise a locally acclimated queen bee for Portland area. When I say local, I mean local. Portland is, we're doing pretty well. We have about 25 queens or so that we'll be trialing and see if we can get them through the winter. And this will be the third generation then of these bees, or at least using the genetic material from the mother's side.
What characteristic are you looking for in these to make them adaptable here?
They overwinter. Uh-huh. That's the only thing. Now, of course, de facto built into that is, well, there's probably some disease resistance built in. You know, there's hygienic behavior. They groom each other, so they kick mites off of each other or things like that.
Once you find the sort of queen bee you want, then how do you make more of them so that you can?
Well, that's the out? Speaking of grafting. That's what we do. We can control the female genes, the X chromosomes, but the mating process is such that it's a crapshoot or something like that, because the queen bee doesn't mate inside her colony, because that would mean she'd be what, mating with her brothers. Not good evolutionarily.
Right.
So she flies to where drones from many different colonies are congregating, and she'll mate with up to 20 different drones. So can we control that part, the Y chromosome, you know? Well, we can't, which is why breeders, you know, big breeders sometimes will artificially inseminate their queens, because then they can control it. But we want the more drones that she can mate with, the healthier the colony will be.
Sounds like computer dating is required here.
So. Well, what we try to do is to saturate our area of Northeast Portland, my partner Tim and me, with kind of father colonies, ones that have also overwintered. Uh-huh. Hopefully that those drones then will mate with our queens. Okay, Kate tells me we have one more call. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah.
You're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to guess 100 times.
100 times? I said within 25? Ding, 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 ding. You got it. 80 times. 80 times or wait.
Oh,
it's a, man, that's a big one.
That was quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, Jim, are you interested in going to see the film?
Yeah, I sure am.
Okay, and then I'm going to stay on the line. Kate will take down your information, and I will clear that with Dawn. That we can actually have four pairs of tickets for this one there. So thanks a lot, Jim. Good job. That's good. Yeah. 80 times.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So the bee's out collecting a lot of pollen and nectar, and she gets, a mixture of that. You know, and what happens to that the pollen? You know, pollen by itself, they don't eat much pollen, or maybe none, directly. Pollen's very hard to digest. And it's hard to break through the cell, the membrane of the pollen. So what bees do is we'll add yeasts and molds and maybe some bacteria, and it will ferment the pollen. And so that weakens the cell wall, and it makes it easier to digest. And one of the theories of colony collapse disorder is because if we're spraying, you know, fungicides, which by themselves are not harmful to bees, but it could be harmful to the microfauna that the bees are using to ferment their pollen. You know, like we use fermentation to store stuff, cabbage, kombucha, sauerkraut. Well, they do the same thing. Pollen can last, you know, months after it gets fermented.
So what is propolis?
That is a product that bees will gather. It kind of gums and resins from trees, cottonwoods, you know, maybe some of the evergreens that have gums and resins. And they'll use that to seal up their home. So there's to outsiders, you know, ants or whatever, or for weather, things like that. And it really weatherizes pretty well too. Mm-hmm. And it, boy, when it sticks to you, it sticks to you. Hmm. You get it on your clothes, that's it.
Interesting. Well, right. I sure like those bees. They do a great job in pollinating the fruit crops around our place.
Well, we have, I don't know what the honey year is going to be like. It's looking better than I thought it was a couple of week or two ago. And so I'm happy with that, but I'll know more next month. You'll be here next month, Jim?
Yes.
August, what are we at? 13th? Yes. August 13th. We got 5 months, 5 weeks this time.
Plan to be here. September, however, I'm taking a trip to Korea and Russia.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Goodness gracious. So,
if that all works out, I will be gone for about 3 weeks. Going to go to Vladivostok, Buryatia, the Ulan-Ude, which is on the east side of Lake Baikal, and then to Irkutsk on the west side of Lake Baikal.
All right. Places
I visited before, and lots of friends there, and I'm looking forward to seeing them.
All right, but we'll see you next
month.
Next month. Okay. Kate, thank you very much for a great job. Will we both be back here in 5 weeks, August 13th? Be well. Thanks for listening.
And thanks for listening to Wednesday Morning Radio on KBOO. Stay tuned for an afternoon of jazz. It is KBOO Portland, and coming right up is the news headlines.
This is KBOO Headline News at noon for Wednesday, July 9th, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, the Portland School Board appeared to have a consensus on a resolution Tuesday night to ask the state to delay the evaluation of schools and teachers using the new state exams that are tied to the Common Core state standards. Some school board members have taken issue with the new tests, indicating concern that they may take too much time and energy from students. Board member Ruth Adkins said the board needed to send a message that the district doesn't support teaching to a test, but educating the whole child.
Portland is sending 16 city managers and employees to a three-day diversity training program at the Mount Hood Resort this week. The program for white male managers will cost $56,000 and includes Mayor Charlie Hale and Police Chief Mike Reese as attendees. The program focuses on eliminating racism, sexism, and homophobia in organizations.
Fire crews from Oregon Department of Forestry and LeGrand fought a wildfire caused by illegal fireworks set off near Fox Hill Road Saturday night. Fire officials warned that people who misuse fireworks or allow fireworks to cause damage can be fined up to $500 and, in addition, be held liable for fire suppression.